Hundreds of thousands of Congolese are caught in a conflict between foreign-backed fighters and the soldiers trying to stop them. Rwanda is accused of supporting the M23 group, an allegation it denies. And some powerful nations seem powerless to prevent the bloodshed. This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. A renewed offensive by M23 fighters in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has forced hundreds of thousands of people from their homes. There are reports of extrajudicial killings, torture and rape. The rebel group has ignored international appeals for a ceasefire and is now marching on Goma, the regional capital. The conflict has pitted the governments of the Democratic Republic of Congo and neighbouring Rwanda against each other. UN investigators have found evidence that Rwanda's military is supporting M23 fighters. From Goma, here's Malcolm Webb.
More than 200,000 people have run away from the M23 armed group as it's advanced in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
The soldiers started removing their big guns that were in front of our homes and took them away. This is why we have decided to leave.
M23 is widely understood to be backed by Rwanda. Uganda has also been accused of providing support. Both governments deny it. UN peacekeepers filmed 500 fighters entering Congo from Rwanda earlier this year. Rwandan soldiers have been photographed in areas held by M23. Their helmets have distinct plastic mounts for equipment, the same as those worn by some M23 fighters seen in this video released by the armed group. Congo's forces have lost ground to M23 in recent weeks. East African leaders plan to hold talks on Thursday. There's been fighting to the north of here, further down this road. It's in the area that's along the border with Rwanda, which is just a few kilometres over there. A lot of the population from the towns where there's been fighting has fled this way into the city of Goma, where tens of thousands of people are staying in camps. People are waiting to see if the heightened diplomatic activity is actually going to change anything on the ground. People have demonstrated in cities across Congo in recent months against Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who they blame for decades of military aggression in Congo. Campaigners say the international community needs to help.
We don't have confidence in the East African community to bring peace. We can never expect Kagame to back down and withdraw. Economic and military sanctions need to be imposed on Rwanda because it depends on funding from other countries.
Earlier this year, the UK paid Rwanda about $160 million to receive deported asylum seekers. After decades of animosity, France and Rwanda restored relations last year, and French President Emmanuel Macron promised €500 million of aid. While tens of thousands of people have been forced into insanitary camps, the US has expressed concern over Rwanda's involvement. The UN, the UK and France have condemned M23, but they haven't said who's backing the group.
For UK, we know that they have this deal with Rwanda. There is also France, who is involved with Rwanda in Mozambique, can be a barrier to take a stand for the right decision, which should be to make sure that all this is stopped.
Rwandan soldiers are fighting insurgents in northern Mozambique, where French oil giant Total has a $20 billion gas project. They wear the same helmets as some M23 fighters. 9 years ago, Congolese forces defeated M23 and its fighters fled to Rwanda and Uganda. That time, Congo had international military support and the US and other countries blocked military aid to Rwanda. This time, people here are waiting to see if politicians from this region and beyond will do what's needed to bring peace and let them go home. Malcolm Webb for Inside Story.
Well, as Malcolm mentioned in that report, the US Embassy, along with the envoys of Belgium, France and the UK, have issued a statement calling on the M23 to immediately withdraw and end the acts that violate international law and to cease hostilities. But that statement stops short of accusing any countries of backing the rebels. But the humanitarian crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo is worsening and is spilling across its borders. The UN estimates that at least 280,000 people have been forced from their homes since March. At least 7,000 have crossed into Uganda since October. Children are disproportionately affected. More than 100 have been separated from their families in areas where fighting is taking place. Let's bring in our guests for today's discussion. From Kinshasa, we're joined by Fred Barmer. He's the executive director of Ebuteli, a Congolese institute for research on politics, governance and violence. From Lubumbashi, we're joined by Angel de Conge Atangana, the UN Refugee Agency representative in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And from London, we're joined by Mikel Orong, a journalist and the author of Do Not Disturb, the story of a political murder and an African regime gone bad. Fred, we'll start with you. Who is supporting the M23 in the DRC and why?
Thank you very much for inviting me and for shedding light on this in this case. From what we know and from especially the UN, the last UN group of experts reports, M23 has been supported by Rwanda mainly since the beginning of its operation, at least back to end of 2021. We know also from many people in the region that at some point, at one point or another, Uganda supported M23. Now, it's important to mention that the support of Rwanda on M23, so on this side, on this new M23, remind also people how M23 back in 2012 and 2013 was also backed by Rwanda, and then we saw many countries mobilize to put pressure on Rwanda, which we don't really see.
But Fred, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what evidence is there to suggest that Rwanda is backing M23 at the moment when Rwanda is saying that it isn't?
So there are many evidences from footage from drones owned by the UN mission in DRC, the MONUSCO. There is also some Rwandan military who were surrendered themselves to the MONUSCO base in Ruchuru a few weeks ago. There is a population, civil society in Ruchuru who testified to see group of military from Rwanda crossing the border. I think the reality of support of Rwanda support to M23 is known by many people, almost every people in the region. And I know for sure that many embassies, Western embassies, and other countries, African embassies in Kinshasa, knows clearly that Rwanda and to some extent Uganda are supporting M23, and it's not out of ignorance that people are not calling out Rwanda.
Angel, we'll come to you in just a moment to talk about the humanitarian situation. But first, Michaela in London, why won't Rwanda admit that they're supporting the rebels in the DRC? And what's of interest to Rwanda in the Democratic Republic of Congo? Why would it want to destabilize the region?
Well, this is a game that Rwanda has been playing since 1996, when it supported a rebel group, the AFDL, that crossed into what was then Zaire's, now Democratic Republic of Congo, to break up the camps of refugees, of Hutu extremist refugees, members of the former army that were camping in eastern Zaire. And that, of course, that rebel group ended up toppling Mobutu Sese Seko, the president of Zaire of the day. So ever since then, really, you've seen this history of Rwanda in the southern parts, in Kivu, and Uganda further to the north, both regarding it really as their prerogative to go into Democratic Republic of Congo, which is a country where the security forces have a real problem exerting control, and using it as their playground, doing as they wish there. Controlling the local politics and also either hoovering up the mineral resources or enabling large-scale smuggling of all the precious metals that we know are in Zaire. So it's got a lot of interest in that. It likes to be seen as a player. And I think what we're seeing behind this new push that really just materialized fairly recently is a feeling on Rwanda's part that it was being beaten in this game by its rival Uganda. So Uganda back last year signed a deal with Kinshasa to build roads, infrastructure in eastern DRC to help DRC to export its minerals, and also it would allow Uganda to crack down on the ADF, which is a local rebel group. I think that there was a feeling in Rwanda of, oh goodness, Uganda and DRC are getting very pally all of a sudden. That's our area. That's our playground. That's our backyard. And we don't fancy being beaten to this by our rival Uganda. We are the key player in the Great Lakes, and if anyone's going to interfere in eastern Congo, it's us. So I think that's probably the motivation. Yeah. Not very attractive.
Michaela, as we were hearing a few moments ago, there has been some criticism of Rwanda from the UN, the UK, France. The US perhaps has been a little more explicit in its criticism, but nobody's doing anything. Why?
Well, your reporter alluded to it earlier. There are all sorts of reasons now why the same group of Western donors who support Rwanda, they give it considerable amounts of aid every year, and they managed to pull back on the aid 10 years ago, and Rwanda accordingly and Uganda therefore then heard that signal and scaled back their support for the M23 when it was terrorizing eastern Congo. There's a reason why a lot of those powers nowadays are just not that interested. Firstly, they're all distracted by Ukraine, which is their main preoccupation, the war in Ukraine. But secondly, if you look at France has gone from being very hostile towards the regime in Kigali to being Paul Kagame's best friend. It's relying on Rwandan troops to deal with the jihadist rebels in Mozambique, where it's got... Total has these considerable gas interests. The British are completely compromised now by the attempt, which is currently balked, but their project to export asylum seekers who are unwanted here in Britain. The whole idea was that they were going to be sent to Rwanda. That's on hold, but hasn't been cancelled as a project. So those are two key countries, key donors, which normally would be quite vocal in criticising Rwanda, and they've effectively been silenced. They're holding their tongues. They know perfectly well what's going on. I speak to some of those players and those officials, and they know perfectly well what's going on, but they don't want to say anything. That leaves the States, and the States wants to stay on good terms with Kigali, because there is this emerging profile that Rwanda enjoys of being the policeman of Africa. And there's a feeling that maybe, you know, increasingly Rwandan peacekeepers may have to play a role in combating the jihadist threat in the Sahel. So why alienate Rwanda? So everyone's playing it softly, and in the resulting scenario, of course, it's the Congolese who pay the price.
Indeed. Angel, what impact is all of this having on the people who live there?
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. The effects are disastrous. As you may know, we have 522,000 refugees who are seeking asylum or who are in refuge in Congo, DRC. Beside that, we have 5.6 million internally displaced Congolese, talkless of the 1 million and more who have sought asylum in the neighboring countries. Only since March this year, we have more than 262,000 persons who have displaced anew, and most of these are actually displaced for many times. And in the territory of Nyiragongo, where you know the volcano is located, we have 128,000 persons who are displaced. This is more of a yet another series of displacement. And I am glad to hear from the previous speaker that this whole turmoil, if I should say so, has begun almost three decades ago. And there is there has been no peace. And if I may say, regardless of who is behind this, I believe the most important thing is really that the people here on ground need peace. Okay. They need peace at long last.
In the meantime, yeah. I mean, there is no peace. What's being done to care for these people, as you say, who've been displaced, some of them many, many times before?
We have indeed many needs, but the people who are again and again displaced definitely are in dire need of shelter. My agency is the lead agency for the shelter cluster for the UN and NGOs. We are striving to bring about that shelter, not least as it is rainy. It is the rainy season now. Many people are sitting along the roadside and are in schools or public buildings. We need to take them to some shelter. We have been working with the local authority to get a suitable site for these people, and yet we got one which I understand now the security might not be guaranteed on top of water, which is not found there. So really, we, the humanitarian, are striving to bring about the basic needs, including shelter, water, clean water, and food. And of course, we have so many challenges to face, not least among them the continued insecurity that really needs to stop.
Fred, Uganda said on Monday that it's going to send 1,000 troops into the DRC to join the regional force which is fighting the rebels. It's already got hundreds of soldiers there under a separate agreement. From what you were saying about Uganda's involvement in the conflict in the first place, is the presence of Ugandan forces going to help or hinder the situation?
Well, so Uganda is going to join the Eastern African, like the DRC, this time as part of the Eastern African Community Force. And I have to say, from a Congolese perspective, there is I have a lot of doubts on whether that force as a whole can be really effective in resolving the conflict in Eastern DRC, knowing that many of countries involved in that force have their own interest in maintaining some sort of insecurity in Eastern DRC. So Uganda has already militaries fighting ADF with limited results so far in Beni area. There is evidence that Uganda is backing M23, so I don't know how Uganda can come and pretend to be fighting against M23, similar to troops like military arm like Rwanda, who will be in the intelligence part of the force at the same time backing M23. There is also the Kenyan in the region. So far, I think there is a couple of hundreds of Kenyan military. And it's not very clear whether by adding more and more and more troops without clear coordination, that will lead to results, at least in the short term.
Fred, why do people have so little faith in East African initiatives and peacekeepers?
I mean, this has to do on East Africa and as well as peacekeepers like MONUSCO and other. I think it has to do with the years of conflict in general. Mikael Arong mentioned that this has been going on for years, for three decades almost. There is people who have been obliged to leave their house three times, four times, five times in the same region, by a group with the same DNI, by the same leaders of similar group. They have seen MONUSCO around for 20 years. They have seen Uganda as an invader, and then now Uganda as a savior. I think we can understand clearly two things: the frustration of Congolese people in the lack of results of UN forces in the Eastern DRC, and also the confusion of seeing the same people who yesterday came as invaders coming back as a savior/ invader, because at the same time they are continuing to support rebellion in the region. And I think people need to find solutions, not only for only this stage of M23, only this phase of the rebellion, but try to question why is it possible that a group like M23 will keep recycling itself for years after... And that's probably a larger question than just immigration.
Okay, we'll put that question to Michaela in just a moment, as well as what she thinks of attempts to mediate peace. But first, Michaela, are the UK and France protecting Rwanda?
Well, they're protecting it with their silence. And they're protecting it by becoming, you know, collaborators with Rwanda in various other projects. France's support, its aid to, you know, it's unveiled this major aid grant to Rwanda. It depends on Rwanda for its peacekeepers' work in Mozambique. It's got a lot invested in that Total installation. Britain is desperately hoping that Rwanda, which is the most populated country in Africa, is going to take all these unwanted asylum seekers. So it's both countries are basically, you know, they're complicit. They've been silenced because they are relying on Rwanda. So you have this completely hypocritical and anomalous situation in which a country that is creating conflict, fueling conflict, is part of the conflict in Eastern Congo that just goes on and on and on, festering on and on for decades, is being seen as a peacekeeper and a policeman elsewhere in Africa, which, you know, these are two completely contradictory roles. But apparently the Western powers have signed up for this arrangement.
So
I think, you know, if the international community really wanted to see an end to the M23, they would need to put their aid agreements with Rwanda on the table and make it clear that aid was coming to an end. And what we saw 10 years ago when the M23 was devastating Eastern Congo is that when they did that, the M23 stopped being a problem pretty much overnight, and it withdrew, you know, it was disbanded. We've seen this repeatedly. Once the West uses its weapons of leverage, it can affect real change, but it's not doing that.
So without that leverage, Michaela, what are the prospects then for these talks mediated by Angola's president that are scheduled for these weeks? Are they going to achieve anything?
It doesn't seem to me that talks are the issue. I mean, you know, who's talking to who? And you know, we have all these sort of these discussions. We have Uhuru Kenyatta meeting Rwanda, but people are still pretending that Rwanda's not involved, and Rwanda's still pretending it's not involved. So, I mean, there's a sort of lack of honesty about the whole situation. I think stronger leverage is going to be required. That's what's happened in the past. And in the meantime, we see, you know, the M23 gradually heading towards Goma. Goma is going to be a big challenge for the M23 because its fighters are going to be extremely unpopular there. We've seen this in the past. There's a huge amount of anti-Tutsi sentiment, and mostly the M23s are made of Tutsi soldiers. Mm.
You paint a pretty bleak picture, Michaela. For the moment, you think that there's nothing to end this conflict. I need a pretty short answer from you here.
Yeah, I think the international community needs to wield a big stick on Rwanda. Instead, it's being invited to attend COP meetings, and Kagame continues to be feted around Europe and in the industrialised north. You cannot send out both of these messages at the same time.
OK. There, we must end it. Time is against us. Many thanks indeed for being with us, Fred Barmer, Angel Dekonge Atangana and Michaela Wrong. And thank you for watching. Don't forget you can see the programme again at any time just by going to the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us on our Facebook page. You'll find that at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can join the conversation on Twitter, our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the team here in Doha, thanks for being with us. Bye for now.